on this episode of Optimal Health Uncovered.
You can't think that you're just going to April 1st snap back into it and play 18 holes every day and stripe it perfectly off of the turf and get right back on the greens.
Thanks everyone for joining us for another episode of Optimal Health Uncovered. We are excited today to have our guest, Adam Renaud, on the podcast. Adam, welcome.
Thank you, Mike and Natalia. Happy to be here and thank you for having me on.
Of course, of course. So Adam is the head golf professional at New Canaan Country Club. Adam, got pulled a little of your bio. So from South Hadley, Massachusetts. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Assuming you played golf from your youth, we'll get into that as well. But you had a pretty great career. You played at the University of Louisville. Rough basketball year. I know the coach just got fired, so sorry about that. We'll talk about that as well. But two-time American in terms of the golf world. Won the CT Professional Championship, finished 10th in the PGA Professional National Championship, competed in the Travers Championship. So, and I'm sure there's a lot more. So long story short, you're a stud of a golfer and have made a career out of golf like many of us wish that we could, who pick up a club and hack away. So thanks again for coming on. And I think easy place to start. What brought you from South Hadley to, you know, Connecticut now?
Well, golf's been a big part of my life. I would say really stems back to when I was 6 or 7 years old and my father would take me to the driving range. And then I was kind of fibbed to that kids can't go on the real golf course until you're 10 years old. From 6 to 10, I went to the driving range 5 days a week and hit a million balls a day. And then when I was 10 years old, I got it was $300 for a junior membership to Holyoke Country Club in Holyoke, Mass.
Yeah.
And that was a 9-hole course. I would get dropped off. My father would drop me off on his way to work at 8 a.m. and pick me up on his way home at 5:30 p.m. And I would be there all day, every day. And some days, I think my record was 63 holes in one day.
Wow.
10 years old, and I always carried my own bag. I had persimmon woods. Never had proper kids clubs when I was 10 years old. All the way back to when I was 6 years old, I used my father's clubs. Played at South Hadley High School. Once I was about 15 years old, I worked outside at golf courses and cleaned the carts, you know, picked the driving range, did that for 7 or 8 years, all through, even when I was at home from Louisville in the summer. And then when I was 22, after I graduated from Louisville, I had a really nice senior year. Thought I had a good chance to make it to the PGA Tour. I went to Q School one time in 2008, and I made it through the first couple of stages, came pretty close to getting some status. And, you know, I kind of, I guess, ran out of money or mojo or energy, I don't know. And I decided that I wanted to go the route of becoming a PGA professional and become a head professional at a golf club one day. And so I started to work in South Hadley at the Orchards Golf Club as an assistant professional. I did that for one season. And then I got a great job when I was 24 at a place in Old Lyme, Connecticut called Black Hall Club. And I worked for a pro named Andrew Campbell. And he was really my idol and mentor for 6 years while I worked there. Worked in the winters at a place called Lost Tree Club, where Jack Nicklaus has lived since 1970 or so. So got to be around Jack Nicklaus and my boss there, Brian Pieper. And then I went to work at Wingfoot, and that kind of was the platform for me. The last thing I needed to do to build my resume and work and build a great network around me. And then 5 years ago, I was offered this job at the Country Club of New Canaan, and I've been here ever since. And I'm super happy, and I love to play. I love to play the game, you know, whether it's just with friends or members. I especially love it under pressure with the adrenaline in competition still, and I try to do it as often as I can. But maybe it's more of my passion now to teach the game of golf and help my members become better players. And when you become a better player, you tend to enjoy the game more, tend to be happier overall. And So that's mostly what I do now. Obviously, as a head golf professional, there's many other hats that I wear, you know, running tournaments, understanding the rules, food and beverage aspects to it, and managing a team. But I still think that, you know, what I do day in and day out is I play golf and I teach the game of golf to my members.
That's unbelievable. So you definitely were a little self-effacing there. It's a pretty amazing career. So congratulations. And you're a young man still. So, you know, there's plenty of time to continue to play and even get better, which I think is impressive in kind of hearing and watching you play and your progression as a golfer is, you know, it's a sport that you can continue to improve upon and get better over time. And, you know, obviously physically things may decline a little bit as we get, you know, towards our later years, but you can pick up a lot of different nuances and improve your game. So it's a lifelong endeavor, one that I've picked up too late. So my golf career started, in grad school. And I've already developed tons of bad habits prior to that. So I wish I had gotten into it earlier, but I'm very passionate about it. Still a high handicap golfer, definitely need your services for sure. But thanks for the bio, and it leads kind of an immediate question, and it wasn't necessarily on our agenda, but I did want to touch on it because you brought up something that's interesting. The youth programs now versus, you know, when you were growing up or when I was growing up, just having different rules completely for youth golfers. So talk us through a little bit, if you don't mind, just what the transition's been in youth programs and how that's developed maybe in the past couple of years.
Yeah, it's evolved tremendously over the last 20 or 30 years. I think we can probably mainly thank Tiger Woods for bringing the game to the masses. But, you know, I can remember when I was a kid, 10 years old at a country club, you know, the members, most of them being older males, were not so keen on 10, 11 and 12 year old kids teeing off and playing the golf course, especially if I happened to be in the group in front of them. So I remember it was always really difficult to just even tee off the first hole. You know, the older members would just jump right in front of you and pretend you weren't there. You know, nowadays it's the older generations encourage and promote junior golf. They love to see that women and children are getting into the game and that everybody can enjoy this game. It was interesting. I didn't watch the whole speech, but Tiger Woods in his Hall of Fame speech last week made some similar comments that he thinks back to when he was in his teenage years going to country clubs to play golf, and there were still racial issues where, because of the color of his skin, he wasn't allowed in clubhouses. And to think, like, wow, that wasn't that long ago. And it's kind of the same with me with junior golf, to think that, I mean, it really was a thing. When I was a young kid at the country club, I was nervous and scared fairly often that I was always doing the wrong thing and I can't play golf or do this or do that. And it's not like that anymore. Now, you know, we have so many kids programs here. We have all these teams. We have travel teams. There's all this new great equipment for children. But I think the main difference is that parents now really urge their kids to get into golf. It's a team sport and an individual sport. And it's kind of fun these days, where it used to not be that way. It used to be, you know, only certain kids, maybe from the upper class, they get to play, but they have to be very careful what they do at the country club. And there's so many rules, and I enjoy it that it's not that way anymore. I think the game's in a tremendous spot where it is right now.
Yeah, I agree. And it's already driven participation up that much higher, and it's going to drive the quality of golf up that much higher. And, you know, getting my kids started at a younger age, and whether they end up being golfers long-term, you know, obviously I have little to no hope that it would be a professional, but just a lifelong endeavor and something that is a very social sport, something that is business oriented, no matter what facet of industry you may get into, almost everyone golfs, and it's a good place where conversations are had. And then just from my, you know, exercise physiology and physical therapy realm, you know, it's a full body sport. It's rotational. It's not tremendous load on the joints from a repetition standpoint. And it's, if you do it well, it's mobility, it's strength, it's stability all combined in one. So it's a great sport to kind of mix in so that these young kids aren't doing the same thing. They're not on the tennis court year round. And if they are, they at least supplement it with a little golf. And if they're on the, you know, the football field, they can kind of supplement it with a little bit of golf and vice versa. So I think it's a sport that I encourage everyone to do from a young age, just because I think it does make you a better athlete. And there's a whole body of research that kind of looks at lifelong athletic development with the game of golf, and just how getting into, you know, rotational type movements is really important to make you a better athlete across the board. So it's great where it's gone, and I'm excited to see where it grows. So thanks for starting us off with that. I think the main gist of the podcast, I know we talked a little bit before coming on, was just the transition from, you know, indoor play, simulated golf, indoor ranges or heated ranges outdoors, you know, more lessons on our end, maybe more golf specific training. And then, you know, we're a little bit early now, but soon we'll start to get into really nice warm weather where we'll be playing outside consistently and making that transition. So I think that's a good starting point for us for this next question is there any nuances to going from maybe simulated golf or hitting and looking at TrackMan data or something analogous type program versus going out and hitting on the course and, you know, actually playing with the nuances of, you know, the various, you know, conditions that may come outdoors with different courses and metrics and things like that. So any kind of tips for golfers as they transition, and what have you found successful in your practice as a professional that has made your clients more successful?
Well, I have a couple of kind of self-made rules that I've developed over time, and many of them because I've learned from my own mistakes. But before even the transition, there's a couple of things. Is you want to make sure that you don't go through a 4 or 5 month winter where you only hit into, let's say, a net. I'm not big on hitting into nets. It's one thing if you can hit on a TrackMan onto a screen that shows you the actual shot. That's one thing. Make sure you're not hitting into a net for a prolonged period of time. Number two is make sure you're not hitting off of only artificial turf for a prolonged period of time. And the latter part being maybe that might mean 2 months. It's okay if you're inside and you want to hit on a TrackMan and practice every day for 2 months, but try not to do it for 4 or 5. You need to hit off. You need to see the ball fly, the trajectory, the ball flight once in a while. And you also need to hit off of real turf and soil once in a while. So hopefully that means that most golfers during a 4 or 5 month winter only hit into a net when you need to. Try to hit on a TrackMan or a flight scope or something that shows you the ball flight, and then try to, I do it in the winter. If there's a day where it's 42 degrees and sunny without much wind in January, I'll go hit balls outside and I'll just tough it out for 25, 30 minutes just so I can hit off of the actual turf. Once you get into the transition, you know, it's different. Now, all of a sudden, you're walking 7 miles. Winter golf, you're not walking. You're also not playing 18 holes. You're probably just hitting balls for 1 hour. So now you're hitting balls for 1 hour to warm up and then playing for 4 hours. So you need to realize that you can't just jump back into it full steam. You probably need to slowly progress into it where, you know, maybe you play 9 holes a few times a week until all of a sudden by mid to late April, now you're back in gear where you can walk 7 miles a day every day. You know, getting back on the range as soon as you can to hit off of real turf and get that sensation again of the divot is you have to adapt to that. That might take a week or two. Putting on, you know, real grass and a putting green with different undulations, and the greens are a little slower in the spring rather than my guess is your putting mat in your basement or in your office is really fast and it's only a 10 footer and it's only dead straight. So those are kind of the things you need to slowly progress into. You can't think that you're just going to April 1st snap back into it and play 18 holes every day and stripe it perfectly off of the turf and get right back on the greens. And going along with that, a big part is to make sure you're stretching, because your body is now going through more than it has been. And also probably eating, you know, you have to keep making sure you're eating on the course and you know, feeding your body, because now you're back outside and you know, it's more grueling on your body. But for me, the biggest thing is I always stretch before and after every round. I would say the last thing, just progressing to now that we're getting back out on the golf course is every year I like to come up with, you have to have goals. So whether it's one, two, or three, to me, this is a big time right now with all of my students and members is we're developing our goals, and then we're developing a plan to try to meet those goals. So with every one of my students, it's usually one, two, or three different goals. But I have that for myself. But yeah, I think the big thing is have goals and then, you know, ease into it. Don't just all of a sudden go out there and start playing 18 or 36 every day.
I love it. You touch on so many good things, and I'm looking at all my bullet points here and you pretty much hit them all. So I'll kind of start from the beginning. I think you touched on something that was on my agenda to discuss, you know, simulated golf or hitting on the track man and hitting, you know, on a mat or on a flat surface. There's some individuals, and I've talked to them, and in full disclosure for anyone listening, we do have a TrackMan. We have a simulator space in our New Canaan office, and we have a TrackMan technology. So this is not a promotion for that. But one thing that I've talked to specifically one of my clients about, he's like, I played on that TrackMan once and it just ruined my game. And it could have been that, you know, the education around that wasn't there on my end to say like, okay, so you maybe were hitting too much and you're not getting outside. So I like that balance of, okay, so just don't hit into the same situation over and over again. If you can avoid hitting in a net, you know, you want to see the ball flight and look at some of those metrics. So I think that was really, really good input. And I think, you know, just looking back at probably mistakes that I've made in educating others, even here in our program, is just making sure that we're getting them outside on a regular basis. So, you know, for say every 2 hours of indoor simulated type play, outdoor, you know, trying to hit X amount of balls, what would your recommendation be and how frequently, weather permitting, those individuals can get out and hit on a grass surface?
Well, in the winter, it's a lot of it just depends on how much free time, yeah, how much, you know, extra income you have to be able to maybe jet down to Florida or Myrtle Beach for 4 days. I'm lucky that it's part of my business. I need to do it. It's my job. So starting, you know, I would say usually November 10th, I take about 2 or 3 weeks completely off. This is another big thing. I do think that every golfer needs to give themselves a break. So maybe it's after Thanksgiving, but I would give yourself, most PGA Tour players take a 3 or 4 month total hiatus from the game where they don't touch a club. I think that's really important. It means that when you do come back, you're going to be reinvigorated and have a kind of a clean slate to start off of, then develop some goals, pick a plan. But I go the whole winter if I can. I think the optimal scenario is you're home in Connecticut or up north where it's cold. You have a place where you can go. And it's a growing trend that they're becoming less and less expensive as there's more competition. You can put one of these simulators in your home, but if you can go somewhere to your gym, or in your home or somewhere and practice on a TrackMan or a legitimate simulator, you know, maybe for 3 or 4 weeks, you're doing it a couple of times a week, and then try to get down to warm weather and play maybe 3 rounds of golf. Then you come back up north, maybe for another month stint. And again, just try to use a TrackMan, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. Maybe you're working with a coach and you're working on a couple things. Maybe you're trying to get your swing plane a little flatter, or you're trying to go through a grip change. The winter is the best time to do it. I mean, it's definitely the easiest to make changes through December, January, February. And then this time of year is when you start to hopefully see that some of those changes you made are going to last, and they're now built in your swing and they're becoming more autonomous. And now you're going to start to really transition into the majority of your golf being real golf outside. I guess the main gist is try to get in some warm weather, or our winters are becoming, you know, easier and easier every winter in Connecticut. So if any day throughout the winter, if it's 45 degrees, try to get outside and hit the ball off of real grass and see the ball fly through the air.
That was perfect. You hit the nail on the head and everything that I wanted to reiterate. That was great advice for everybody. We mentioned metrics maybe a couple times, so without going too in the weeds with it, you know, if someone is hitting a simulator in TrackMan or another technology that's somewhat analogous to it, what are the most important metrics or top three that individuals can kind of look at? You know, is it launch angle, club head speed? No. And then do you find that individuals kind of get fixated on that and it may not translate to their outdoor game as much, or is there some nuance? Like, what could we focus on there?
Well, I would say in the winter, that is the time that it's okay to be fixated on. I don't think you want to through the actual season when you're competing. But in the winter, I really like to look at three metrics are club path, club face at impact. I like to look at face to pass. So I like to look at club path angle, face to path angle, and then attack angle. So those are the three metrics that I really like to explain to every one of my students what they mean. You know, are you swinging in to out or out to in, or are you hitting the back of the ball? Is the club face open, square, or closed at impact? And what is your attack angle at the moment of impact? Which attack angle can be confused with steepness or steep or shallow, which it actually has no correlation. To me, the attack angle metric that TrackMan is showing you, I like to call it shaft angle at impact, because that's essentially what it's telling you is what is the angle of the shaft when you strike the ball, you know, or how much are you de-lofting the club or compressing it, or how much are your hands ahead of the club head. And I always think that in golf, you're trying to be as shallow as possible, but have as much attack angle or shaft angle at impact. To me, those three metrics, club path, face to path, and attack angle, that combined with the golf club you are using, because let's just say you had a really whippy low kick point shaft, that would make the ball flight go higher. But let's just say you have clubs that are properly fit for that player. The golf club makes a difference, and then where you hit it on the sweet spot on the club face makes a difference. But really, those five things, club path, face to path, attack angle, the golf club itself, and where you hit it on the club face, those five things, actually, I've never realized this, the golf ball also, that is what creates the ball flight. And in golf, us golfers are always in search of optimal ball flight, or at least the most consistent ball flight for a certain player. We're really looking for efficiency. You know, you want to swing as smoothly as you can, but still hit it high enough, far enough, spin it enough. And that's really what we're all in search of. It's what Tiger Woods talks about all the time. It's always about seeing a certain ball flight. What's nice is you can, if you're using the proper golf ball and you have properly fit golf clubs, you can take those two things out of it. So that leaves you with just club path, face to path, attack angle, and where did I hit it on the face, which you can put, TrackMan will show you that, or you can put impact tape on your club. But those four metrics, you know, create your ball flight. And what's really nice is that with most students, they'll be very proficient at two or three of those metrics, and then one or two are their inconsistency or deficiencies. So it's pretty neat to narrow it down for a student to be like, wow, your club path is amazing. You're around zero every time. You hit the dead back of the ball every time. And your club path is amazingly, or I'm sorry, your face to path is also amazingly consistent. Your club face to path is around negative one every time. So for a right-hander, it's just one degree closed, which means you're hitting this beautiful 5-yard draw every time. But wow, your attack angle is around zero or positive one with a 7-iron, which means you're adding a lot of loft at impact. You're scooping it, which means you're going to hit it fat or thin, which that's another good topic, is that fat and thin derive from the same exact issue. There are 100% correlated. So we might realize with that student in December, hey, Mr. Smith, your attack angle is your issue. This is where the problem lies. Now let's come up with a plan so that by April 1st, your attack angle with a 7-iron isn't one on average, it's negative five, which is where we want it to be, which means you're now compressing the ball and launching it at a more proper launch angle and spin rate. That's how I break it down, is with every student, I want to explain to them those four metrics, what they mean, and have them have a total understanding of it, and then realize for their swing, which of those four metrics are their proficiencies and which ones are their deficiencies, and how can we make the change?
That's outstanding. So that's extremely helpful. And I know from hitting there and feeling like, as a relatively high handicap golfer, that like all aspects of my game suck, actually seeing some components that are going well is really enhancing. To your point, to say, okay, of those four metrics, I'm actually doing a good job in two of them. And I really can kind of fine tune with working with somebody like yourself to get on those other, get those other two aspects, you know, improved upon. So I've found it actually, you know, more morale boosting for me than demoralizing in hitting in the simulator more so this year than ever before. So hopefully it translates over for me. Some other things that you talked about, you know, prior to this was appropriate warm-up. So again, I'd be remiss as a physical therapist and kind of a strength and exercise physiologist type person to talk about just appropriate warm-up. You know, for me, it's getting into multi-planar movements. It doesn't have to be anything too fancy, but golf, you know, you're hitting in all three planes of motion, front and back, which is your sagittal plane, side to side, which is your frontal plane, and the all-important transverse or rotational plane. So getting individuals loosened up and moving in those directions is important. And static stretching is, versus dynamic stretching is always a question that I do get. So if we can address that, you know, it's fine to sit there and statically stretch, whether it be hamstrings or otherwise, count to 30, count to a minute. But I do encourage people to then do some type of movements, you know, thereafter, whether it be just simple, you know, knees to chest or just kind of rotating side to side with your club and then getting out and hitting and going in a club progression from there. So when you have individuals get on the range outside of stretching, so they're stretched or warmed up, do you have a specific, you know, nuanced warm up for those individuals? Okay, start with your short irons and then build up from there. Or is it individual depending on the skill level of the golfer?
So I am about 6 years ago, I had a big like revelation and change in my life where I basically read Tom Brady's book. He's my idol. I was a big Patriots fan. Now I'm a Bucks fan because I'm infatuated with Tom Brady. And I really changed my diet, changed my stretching. But when I am with a student, I always ask them, what, you know, have you stretched yet? What is your stretching routine before you play golf? What's your warm-up routine? And you made a good point, Michael. Yeah, there's static and there's dynamic. So I usually share with the student what my routine is, or I tell them kind of what the average tour player's routine is. And then they're usually in shock when I reveal that information. Right. And then I say, all right, well, let's develop a routine for yourself, because everybody's routine should certainly be different based on your age, your body type, and what parts of your body are tight. But I usually tell them that my routine is I get to the golf course an hour and 10 minutes before tee off. I go in the locker room and I do static stretching for about 15 minutes. I also do foam rolling for 5 minutes, static stretching for 15. Then I head to the driving range, but I do dynamic stretching kind of on the driving range. Some people look at me like I'm crazy for about 5 to 10 minutes. And then I'm finally ready to start hitting wedges, which I'm going to hit very little, almost chip shots in the beginning, and then turns into pitch shots. And then it turns into two thirds and then three quarter and then full shots. So from the time I arrived at the course to the time that I hit my first full swing is probably 25 minutes before I tee off. So I guess that's 45 minutes worth of kind of warming up. And I would actually tend to guess that the average PGA Tour player's routine is longer. Most of them have a personal masseuse instead of a foam rolling. That they might get a half an hour massage, go into a steam room, do static stretching for 15 or 20 minutes, or they're probably getting stretched out by their masseuse. Then they're going to go do some dynamic stretching on the range, and then do a slow warm up process where it's chips, pitches. I know a lot of players kind of will start with a pitching wedge and hit it 30 yards and then just go in 5 yard increments all the way up to 130. So it takes them, you know, 20 shots to get there. But I ask every student, I say, well, where are you tight? Where do you have issues? Do you have a bad knee? Do you have a bad shoulder? You know, and then the big thing is consistency. My stretching, my warm up routine before I make my first full swing on the practice range, and Camilo Vijaykas's or Paul Casey's, it's the biggest thing is that it's extremely consistent. You know, how much we sleep every night, what our diet is, what we eat on the golf course, how we warm up, how we stretch, extremely consistent. And I think that might be maybe the most important part, so that by the time you stand on the first tee to tee it up, you've gone through your body is in the same exact or very similar state as it is every single time you play. That way nothing feels funny or different.
Yeah, that was perfect. I mean, if everyone can do what you recommend, then I think the injuries that we'd see on the back end would be far less. The performance they'd get out of their golf game would be much more consistent. So that is everything that I really wanted to cover. And I know you have kind of a hard out for another meeting. So I appreciate your time and for being with us. So everyone listening, Adam, you know, I know you have a busy membership and you're probably not taking any other clients. Any way that people can access you or anything you wanted to share with the listening audience?
Yeah, pretty busy. I would say at times too busy, but I like to kind of go all day. And then all of a sudden it's 7 o'clock at night and I'm like, oh, wow, I got a lot done today. So that's kind of how I roll. I love golf, enjoy golf. If you haven't played the Country Club in New Canaan yet, try to get out here. It's a really amazing golf course. It's an old Willie Park Jr. design, and we've put in a lot of time and effort to do some renovations, and the course is in amazing shape. Our superintendent, Mike Rowe, is as good as it gets. So I'm really lucky to be here. And, you know, or the other cool thing just for everybody listening is if you live in Fairfield County or near it or Westchester or Long Island, I mean, we're in the golf capital of the world. We have an amazing 7-month season, and it's a great time to be a golf fan. It's a great time to be a golfer. And we're kind of in the golf capital of the world. So it's a pretty awesome game, and try to get around to some of these great courses that we have in the area.
Awesome. Ditto to everything you said. Thanks again for coming on. We'll let you run. For everyone listening, this is another episode of Optimal Health Uncovered. Feel free to drop us some comments if you want to hear anything specific. And as always, leave us a review, and we appreciate you listening. Thanks.